Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with Drs. Francine Foss and Lynn Wilson. I'm Bruce Barber. Dr. Foss is a professor of medical oncology and dermatology specializing in the treatment of lymphomas. Dr. Wilson is a professor of therapeutic radiology and an expert in the use of radiation to treat lung cancers and cutaneous lymphomas. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can contact the doctors directly. The address is canceranswers@yale.edu, and the phone number is 1-888-234-4YCC. This evening, Francine and Lynn are pleased to welcome Dr. Sukru Emery to the program for a conversation about transplantation. Dr. Emery is Section Chief of Transplantation Surgery and Director of the Yale New Haven Transplant Center. Here's Francine Foss.
Could you start us off by just telling us what is the transplant program? What does it do?
The transplantation in general and anyone who develops end-stage organ disease that will be able to change the organ, getting the organs from cadaveric donors or some of the transplant with living donors, that we can change the organs and that we can handle the problem accordingly.
How did you become interested in transplantation, and what are your specific clinical interests?
Well, my subspecialty is hepatobiliary surgery in training. I was trained in before 1980s. Then transplantation was just coming to the surface of those years. And especially with the liver, those days, and we did not have anything to do but hold the patient's hands and while they are dying, because we diagnosed the cirrhosis. We had very minimal the options to offer them. Someone who has bleeding, we used to do shunt surgeries, or someone with the small tumors, we have to do resections of those days. So for me, transplantation was a natural extension of the hepatobiliary surgery.
Can you tell us what the most common organ is that's transplanted in the United States?
The United States, the most common organ, of course, is the kidney, because we have two kidneys instead of as opposed to one liver and one heart and one pancreas. Therefore, the kidney is the most common transplantation in the United States and around the world. Also, there were more patients in the past, and now there are more patients waiting for transplantation, waiting for kidney transplantation. To be exact, in the United States, a little over 100,000 patients waiting for transplantation. Among them, and 70,000, they are waiting for kidney, 17,000 waiting for liver. These are the two big groups.
So with these different organs, when is a transplant typically done, say, for a kidney patient and for a patient with a liver problem?
For kidneys, we have two categories. And for kids or children, we prefer to do the transplant before they start the dialysis. On the other hand, for adults, and many times, we do the transplant once they start dialysis. That's the indication for transplantation. For liver transplantation, we have a set system for allocating the organs, which became gold standard at this point, what we call MELD, Model End-Stage Liver Disease Scoring System. We usually prefer not to transplant anyone MELD score less than 15, because those individuals, 1 year survival without transplant is almost 100%. So the transplant is not justified. There are other signs we use to decide whether a patient is eligible for transplantation or not. What we call degree of the illness. Or the cirrhosis, we categorize the cirrhosis two types. One is compensated cirrhosis. Although a patient has cirrhosis, their function is almost 100%. They are 100% functional. They go work and do the work, and so on and so forth. As opposed to the decompensated cirrhosis, those were the individuals, and they develop serious side effects of the cirrhosis, including what we call encephalopathy or cloudy mind, esophageal variceal bleeding, muscle wasting, bone disease, as well as spontaneous bacterial peritonitis, other infections. Those were the signs will tell us that patient is doing poorly. We have to hasten the transplant operation.
Can you tell us a little bit about the team approach in transplantation, what other physicians are involved, and how a patient goes through the process of getting a transplant?
Well, we have the real team approach from head to toe, I must say, that when patient comes to or referred to us for transplantation, we have our coordinators, we have our hepatologists and nephrologists for kidney. They see patients and they evaluate the patients. During this evaluation process, we ask many other disciplines to help us out, including cardiac evaluation, including pulmonary evaluation, including dental evaluations, including the colonoscopies, other endoscopies if it's necessary, psychiatric evaluation, social work evaluation, so on and so forth. And of course, and there are specific cases, we ask more evaluation, for example, patients with bone problems, and we can talk with the orthopedics or endocrine people, especially metabolic bone diseases, and patients with liver tumor, and we always discuss with the medical oncologist what to do with that. And plus that we ask anesthesia, intensive care units, and other disciplines. For example, for pediatrics, we work with the child psychiatric services for their psychological evaluation or whether they have any post-traumatic stress. We do some studies to decrease the post-traumatic stress of these patients. We have some special programs with the psychiatrists, especially with adult patients with the substance abuses, what we call liver smart study, that we do group therapies for these patients in order to increase their sobriety and the insight about the drinking and other drug problems, that they will become better candidates for transplantation. After transplant, definitely they do better. It's a perfect setup for a multidisciplinary team approach. And in inpatient, after transplantation, or in our patients before transplant, those get sick, requiring admission to hospital. We have social workers, we have pharmacists, we have nutritionists. They work with them, and if obesity is a problem, we address those issues. And our job is just to make sure that we take care of every aspect of the care of our patients.
I know that you have a very robust and busy surgical service. Where do your patients come from? Are they from Connecticut, the region, other states, other countries?
Well, we have a mix of everything, I must say, that we have local patients, and first aim is just to help our local patients, especially citizens of Connecticut. That's our first aim. But we have other patients and from Chicago, from Oklahoma, from Puerto Rico, from Turkey and Italy and Gulf countries, and many different patients. And they come to us because of our reputation and because of our good results.
Can you talk to us a little bit about the complications that can happen with a transplant?
Yeah, I mean, transplantation is a very difficult operation. First of all, we are crossing the line that I call sometimes, and we are doing certain things against the mother nature. So then there are many hurdles to overcome. A pre-transplant for livers, a major problem is development of esophageal variceal bleeding, or what we call spontaneous bacterial peritonitis. Because of the severe portal hypertension, patients develop fluid in the abdomen, what we call ascites. That ascites may get infected, and therefore we have to deal with these infectious problems. And other thing is muscle wasting related issues. Fractures are more common with patients with cholestatic liver diseases such as PSC, PBC, that we need to take care of this, that we communicate with the bone metabolism experts to make their bones more sturdy, actually. For kidney transplant patients, and of course in dialysis, although we are very grateful that at least we have some remedy while they are waiting for transplant to alleviate the degree of toxins in the body, Dialysis is not an easy process for the patients, and every dialysis episode and the patient's blood sugar comes down to 35-40, and blood pressure is always down, and they really feel bad after every dialysis session. It's not ideal. As a result, especially patients more than age 50 with kidney diseases, cardiovascular problems and complications are more common, leading to their demise. So that's the major problem for the kidney. The second problem is bone problems, and because of the dialysis, they lose their bone minerals, and their bones are very weak as well. Post-transplant, early after transplantation, there are many problems. For example, clotting in the vessels, what we call hepatic artery thrombosis, portal vein thrombosis, or hepatic vein thrombosis. When we look at the nationwide data, the incidence of these complications is somewhere around 5 to 7%. In our center, this is 0%. We have Baldac complications, which nationwide and what we call Baldac complications, Baldac stricture or bile leaks after surgery, nationwide is somewhere around 30%. Ours is 15% here. And also we have infectious complications. I'm really grateful to the hospital because we have very robust infection control system, hand washing, wearing gowns and gloves before touching the patients. Therefore, our infection rates overall are really, really low, somewhere around 2 to 3% after transplant operations, as opposed to nationwide, this number goes to 30 to 35%. For me, the most important problem early postoperative period is the infection, because in order to treat the infection, we have to decrease the immunosuppression. On the other hand, in order to make the liver function or kidney function, we have to give immunosuppression. In a way, that pushes us the corner and makes the case very difficult for us. Late complications, especially in pediatric patients, opportunistic infections, what we call major culprits are CMV and EBV infections. The reason I said the pediatric patients is more problem because these patients and usually our patient population is most of them are aged less than 5. Their CMV and EBV titers are negative. On the other hand, since we are doing split and living donor liver transplants, that most of the organs come from adult patient population. They are CMV and EV positive, and that creates a high-risk group for the patients. Then children can develop CMV and EBV infections. Especially the EBV is really important because EBV can lead to what we call post-transplant lymphoproliferative disease, which is really important tumor development. Therefore, we check our patients routinely, and we control monthly CMV and EBV titers and make sure that everything is under control.
What sort of cancer patients do you see?
For adults, and our main cancers for liver is hepatocellular carcinoma and cholangiocarcinoma. Most of our patients are with hepatocellular carcinoma. The reason for that definitely underlying cirrhosis. We rarely see a patient with normal liver functions, normal liver structure without cirrhosis with hepatocellular carcinoma. That might be maybe 3 to 5% of our patient population. For the cancer development, the main culprit is hepatitis C. As we know, hepatitis C is the major reason at this point for development of liver cirrhosis. And our estimate tells us that up until the year 2020, we are gonna see increase in hepatitis C cases. The calculation we made and tell us that and someone who's diagnosed with hepatitis C cirrhosis, approximately 20% of the patient will develop hepatocellular carcinoma within 5 years time frame. So that's a major problem for us. And of course, in pediatric patients, we have another tumor, what we call hepatoblastoma, which is totally different etiology for this tumor without any liver injury, underlying liver injury.
We're going to take a short break for a medical minute. Please stay tuned to learn more information about the transplant program with Dr. Sukru Emery.
It's estimated that nearly 200,000 men in the U.S. will be diagnosed with prostate cancer this year, and over 2,000 new cases will be diagnosed in Connecticut alone. 1 in 6 American men will develop prostate cancer in the course of his lifetime. Major advances in the detection and treatment of prostate cancer have dramatically decreased the number of men who die from this disease. Screening for prostate cancer can be performed quickly and easily in a physician's office using 2 simple tests, a physical exam and a blood test. Clinical trials are currently underway at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers like the one at Yale to test innovative new treatments for prostate cancer. The Da Vinci robotic surgical system is an option available for patients at Yale that uses 3D imaging to enable the surgeon to perform a prostatectomy without the need for a large incision. This has been a Medical Minute, and more information is available at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. This is Dr. Lynn Wilson, and I'm joined by my co-host, Dr. Francine Foss. Today, we're joined by Dr. Sukru Emery, and we're discussing the Yale transplant program. Dr. Emery, could you talk to us a little bit about the hepatic biliary cancer program?
Well, when I came to Yale and what I decided that while developing and improving and the kidney program and developing liver program, I thought that it's wise to develop hepatobiliary cancer program. That is the program we have now, and it's again multidisciplinary program, involve parties and the transplant surgeons and the medical oncologists, hepatologists, interventional radiologists, and diagnostic radiologists, and the oncologic surgeons. The group of experts and taking care of liver problems and liver cancer, we get together. The advantage is providing a comprehensive care to our patients. If I give an example, someone with the liver cancer and underlying liver cirrhosis, and this individual doesn't need to go one place to the other place and one consult to the other consult. Patient will be prepared and presented in our meeting, and all the experts there, that there will be only one decision making for this patient. That will, of course, the reaching the decision making very quickly, without wasting any time, and also that will be the best decision for the patients, because it's coming from expert panels and based on patients' disease category, based on underlying cirrhosis, degree of cirrhosis, we offer different treatments. The treatments included one is removing the disease, removing the tumor together with part of the healthy liver, what we call liver resection. In order to do that, patient should have very good liver functions. If patient has extent, if patient has cirrhosis, which is not suitable for resection, those individuals will undergo what we call ablation techniques, and whether radiofrequency ablation or what we call transarterial chemoembolization. And those techniques allow us to keep the tumor in the liver, control the tumor, therefore patients, and they never lose their chance of transplantation later on. And of course, patients with the liver tumor still the candidate for transplantation if they have living donor options. We prefer to directly go to living donor liver transplantation. Of course, transplant will take care of two problems. One, take care of the tumor. Other one, take care of the underlying liver disease, that we can make the shortcuts. But the aim of this program, again, and providing our patient best possible care in comprehensive way.
So you mentioned that in some cases you might resect only part of the liver. How often can a patient with liver cancer expect to be able to save their liver?
Well, if there's an underlying cirrhosis, and eventually these individuals, they are going to need a transplantation. There's no doubt about that. But on the other hand, we have shortage of organ donors. If we think that patient has what we call Child's age cirrhosis, early cirrhosis, compensated cirrhosis, and with normal liver enzymes, including INR, bilirubin, and normal platelet count, those are the patients very suitable for delivery section. Well, unfortunately, many of our patients, they have advanced cirrhosis. As a result, the performing liver surgery for them is really difficult. On the other hand, we do also resection for patients with different liver diseases, such as liver adenoma, liver hemangioma, and other liver tumors, such as liver hemangioendothelioma and liver angioma or angiosarcoma. Some patients we perform liver transplant, liver surgery, what we call liver resection.
Obviously, these procedures are very complicated and complex and require a tremendous amount of expertise. And just for the benefit of our listeners, this is obviously not the type of procedure that is done in every hospital. How many places in Connecticut, for example, provide a service as comprehensive as yours, Dr. Emery?
Our program is really, our results are the number one in the country. Not in the Connecticut, but in Connecticut we have two liver transplant programs and two kidney programs, and one is in Hartford, one is at Yale here. I will say this thing because if you look at the SRTR data, which I will explain a little bit, because federal government mandates us in all transplant programs in the United States, and they have to submit their results to federal government, what we call scientific register of transplant recipients. Therefore, we have center-specific data as well as overall nationwide data and statistics. Based on that, those statistics, when we look at it, our one-year survival in pediatric liver transplantation is 100%. Adult liver transplantation is 98%. So therefore, our program is not comparable with any program. We have expertise, we have resources, we have know-how, and plus that we have multidisciplinary team approach to serve our patients best possible way.
So Zuckwa, you also mentioned that there's a lot of care that goes into the patient after the transplant. The patient is on immunosuppressive medications. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Of course, you know, the organs are coming from another individual. Therefore, the recipient's immune system is going to recognize the organ as a foreign body and will try to get rid of it. It's what we call rejection. In order to prevent rejection, we have to use anti-rejection medications. In other words, it's immunosuppressive medications. And of course, those medications are heavy-duty medications with a lot of complications. That requires a lot of expertise to run the immunosuppression. I always give example to my patients that running the immunosuppression is similar to tightrope walking. One side is rejection, one side of the side effects of all these medications. That's this medical art, how to run the immunosuppressive medications. If anyone reads all the complications of these immunosuppressive medications, and definitely they can freak out because there are many complications. On the other hand, we rarely see all these complications because we follow our patients very carefully. For example, after we discharge the patients from the hospital, first month we see them two times a week. And during these visits, we check their immunosuppressive blood levels. We examine them, we check their kidney functions, liver functions, electrolytes, and everything. We make the adjustments accordingly. Of course, that will give us the best possible results for our patients. Those immunosuppressive medications, of course, make immune system very weak, then sets a stage for development of opportunistic infections. Therefore, we have to follow our patients carefully. We have to cover our patients for certain bacterial infections, viral infections, or fungal infections after surgery. Another note I would like to make, early on we use high doses of immunosuppressive medications, but as we go, we decrease the immunosuppressive medications dose-wise, as well as the number of immunosuppressive medication we use. Usually 6 months after transplant, our patients are on only one immunosuppressive medication with minimal dose, actually.
Would they ever actually stop these medications, or are they pretty much on them for life?
Based on our current knowledge, we tell our patients that they are going to use those medications indefinitely. On the other hand, I have at least, my experience with liver transplantation, 3,000 transplants, and I have maybe 50 patients, and we were able to stop all immunosuppressions, and they are doing very well. Those are mainly pediatric patients, actually.
What sort of changes have you seen in the field of transplantation in the last decade? And also, as a second question, what changes have happened here at Yale in the last 10 years?
First of all, when I involved the transplant field, and it was beginning of 1980s, those days were very difficult in every aspects of transplantation in terms of availability of different immunosuppressive medications, which nowadays we have great immunosuppressive medications. As a result, I don't remember any patient I lost secondary to rejection or chronic rejection, except non-compliance issues. The second issue is a development of ICU, anesthesia care, and development of a field of hepatology, and also technical expertise performing the liver transplantation. Those are the general the outlines, basically. But specifically, we also develop something that's very unique, a multidisciplinary team approach. That's the major changes, and we added to liver all transplant field, indeed. When we do rounds are done, and every day, one hepatologist, transplant hepatologist, one transplant surgeon, hepatology fellow, surgical fellow, transplant surgical fellow, residents, PAs, MPs, pharmacists, social workers, nutritionists, and nurses all together. Therefore, we give our patients a better care. Indeed, and I developed this methodology in a multidisciplinary team approach. It was 1997. I was assigned to build the pediatric liver transplant program at Mount Sinai. At that time, I built the program in multidisciplinary fashion. Last year, actually, CMS mandated that all programs should be multidisciplinary. I had that vision, and because I knew what my patients at that time needed, and I followed my gut feelings and instincts, and which I was right. What changed Yale at the last 10 years? Of course, I cannot say last 10 years, but I can only tell, last 3.5 years I've been here. I believe that many things change the last 3 years. First of all, medical school and the hospital, they come together to build excellent programs and clinical programs. There is a focus on the developing translational research, that the research should be 100% meaningful, that it can be used for the patient care and improving the outcomes.
Dr. Sukru Emery is the Section Chief of Transplantation Surgery and Director of the Yale New Haven Transplant Center. If you have questions or would like to share your comments, visit yalecancercenter.org, where you can also subscribe to our podcast and find written transcripts of past programs. I'm Bruce Barber, and you're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.